dancing at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Bread and Roses Show on WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton and streaming live on valleyfreeradio.org. My name is Elliot Tarry and I'm your host today in the waning days of Black History Month, a month that has taken on renewed power and meaning in the wake of extrajudicial killings by police of unarmed black men, women, and young children across this country. Quite naturally, our minds and memories, almost in a sense of deja vu, rear back to the 60s when black leaders were summarily murdered in a successful program by the white power structure led by the FBI to stop black people from gaining power. Black power. On today's Bread and Roses Show, we will take a trip back in time to that violent and yet socially conscious revolutionary era. I do hope that you all had an opportunity to see the PBS documentary on the Black Panther Party this month, and if not, I suggest you do so for no other reason but nostalgia. That's okay. The documentary is by no means complete. No 2-hour special could be, but it captures quite a bit of history in the form of audio, video, and reflections by those who lived it. What I had planned to do today was weave audio clips from Black Power and Black Panther leaders with the musical expressions of their consciousness, but in searching, I found a radio documentary of the music itself, produced, I believe, by radio host and author Ricky Vincent of KPFK, our Pacifica affiliate in California. Vincent focuses on the relevance of the Black Power movement, particularly the Black Panther Party, to the music of that era, which carried the political, cultural, and ideological messages to the people. Music that in some cases became anthems by artists such as Marvin Gaye, James Brown, and Gil Scott-Heron, with special mention of Lumpin', the official Black Panther Party band. An advisory, some may find words used by the last poets offensive, but in the end it is poetry whose intent was to transform and educate. Now, let's hear Ricky Vincent and the music of the Black Power movement.
When you have real change, everybody's thing began to change. Teacher began to teach a new lesson. Preacher began to preach a new sermon. And the musician also tries to capture the new thing so that we might have melody and have rhythm as we do our thing.
What's interesting is how the story has been not told, obfuscated, if you will. I went to my civil rights history books. I went to my Black Power narratives, and I would look up James Brown to see if his name was even in the index, and it wasn't. For the most part, your political history of the movement of that time period is told in a rather antiseptic way. It was about ideologies, movements, mobilizations, you know, bylaws were changed and customs were changed, and those were the victories of the movement, and keep on stepping. But what was really happening on the ground level, on the level of people's lives, people were experiencing a revolution. They were experiencing an awakening. They were experiencing a change. They were experiencing
R-E-S-P-C-T, find out what it means to me.
A new level of respect, if you will, which Aretha Franklin managed to articulate, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, which was not simply spelling out letters, but that was a way of affirming black folk culture. If anyone hangs around black girls playing the jump rope, they would use a lot of rhythmic cadences and spelling out words and things like that. So it was a way of identifying things on a ground level of how a black awakening was taking place in the glue of everyone's daily lives.
Some of us will fall with money to spend, but I can just hear him in the back of his mind saying, didn't have to be here. You didn't have to love for me.
Oh, be black, baby, be black. Now Phony Tony here has got a long time fear. Thinks he's bright, cause he's acting white. But what that man can't see when he looks at me is that black pride's everywhere.
You're in tune to my man Ricky Vincent every Friday night on 94.1 FM KPFA.
Okay, my name is Ricky Vincent. I'm a scholar of music and black history. I teach at a number of schools in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I also do a radio program called The History of Funk on KPFA Radio in Berkeley in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so I sort of orient my whole approach to social justice, connecting the music to the movements that take place. And I was a child of the Black Power Revolution, a child of the 60s. So my thing has been, you can explore what happened to the movements of the people through understanding their music, through their expression, through their cultural expression. You can see where the culture came from, where it was, and where it was, where it headed.
Everybody knows that all the people don't have liberty, all the people don't have freedom, all the people don't have justice, all the people don't have power, so that means none of us do. Take this country and change it. Turn it upside down and put the last first and the first last. Not only for black people, but for all people.
I am somebody.
When we think about the Black Power movement, music is part of that identity. It was very much a part, and soul music and funk was very much a part of the sort of identity forming at the time, particularly the sort of militant identity at the end of the 60s. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, you can see how the Black Power movement evolved, how civil rights movement evolved into Black Power, because the way people lived was turning, was moving towards a sense of self-pride, a sense of righteous indignation about what the West had to offer and what the West had done to their self-worth, to their self-identity. And people were breaking free of a lot of the Christian trappings, turning towards Islam, towards African culture, turning towards a different way of looking at themselves as African Americans in the United States. So all these things were in play.
You keep talking about the world and that we need a change. Dadgummit, all you do is sit on your you know what and never do a thing.
So what was happening was people were growing, they were changing, and you could hear it on the radio because the radio was an independent Black cultural production. It was produced and developed by Black DJs and program directors who, for the most part, had a very large, wide berth for creative expression. There were obviously things they could not do. They couldn't explicitly say, you know, go to a rally or support so-and-so, but they could definitely, with a lot of flavor and style, tell their community a rally was happening. And people were able to learn the soul and style of the Black Awakening. And everybody had to identify who they are and where they stand within this movement.
Rapping black. I say when people pass their souls around, like tattered hats or old tin cups, they chance to sell for pennies their most worthy possession. Rapping black.
I say we should take a lesson from the insect. Take a bee. If a bee want honey, he'll go out and make it. And if niggas want freedom, all they got to do is quit crying and lying and dying and just reach out and take it. Take it. Take it.
Our nation is moving toward two societies. One Black, one white. Separate and unequal.
He came over there, and I'm going to wash the black off you.
Then drew his revolver.
Fires in 29 different states and 125 cities.
The lieutenant was compelled to fire his revolver several times.
Policeman waiting, looking up at a building. The sniper is up on the roof. Everyone crouched down behind their cars.
The Panthers are really a cross-generational operation. And I think it's great that the legacy folks are doing all of these events. Billy X, Billy Jennings, is always doing the photo exhibits and bringing the Black history, honoring Huey P. Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense.
We developed our own culture, you know, and our culture was hard work. Our culture was unity in the community. We had a whole list of social programs that was copied and later became the fabric of America. So everything we did was built around making the community a better place to live. How to deal with police brutality, how to deal with hunger in your community, how to develop legal aid entities. I don't know one city in America to this day that don't have a breakfast program that feeds kids in their area. It's nationwide now. And we started free busing the prison programs. The county hospital system would not go into the black community after dark. So we had a free ambulance program. And one of those avenues that we used was the Black Panther Party newspaper that came out every week, sold for 25 cents. We sold 400,000 newspapers per week. We were the number one weekly black newspaper in America from 1968 to 1971. So the Black Panther Party was a place that people came to learn answers to problems.
I was in the high school in 1968, Martin Luther King was killed.
instead of having English, our English teacher had discussions on current events. And also, Bobby Hutton of the Black Panther Party was killed 2 days later, so all this is on the news. So she was an advanced thinker. She was an older white lady, but I guess she seen something in me. And the night I graduated from high school, I left town. She gave me a book, and the book was the autobiography of Malcolm X. So I am going to Oakland. I am reading this book on the bus. I am going to summer school in Oakland. And during my criminology class one day, I heard this big uproar saying, "Free Huey, off the pig, free Huey." And I go around to the rally, and just so happened Eldridge Cleaver and Bobby Seale spoke that day. And it was quoting things I had just previously read an hour ago about what Malcolm was saying we should be doing. So I really paid attention to him. And so that summer 68 was when I joined the Black Panther Party.
Today, a judge set Newton free on $50,000 bond.
Newton's last trial and manslaughter conviction were overturned by a higher court this year. So now he'll be tried again. And in the meantime, he is out on bail. He is back on the street.
So a lot of soul songs, people say, well, where, you don't have an explicit message song that says Black Power, Revolution, blah, blah, blah. Well, you had a lot of music that celebrated that energy, that spirit, that defiant energy. And it even came from Motown Records, from what looked like benign offerings from record companies that were just trying to get paid. Sam and Dave's Soul Man, for example, is a classic of populist entertainment. Everybody enjoys the groove of that song and how much energy it has, but it also speaks to the self-identity that African Americans were developing in 1967 and 68. Songs that refer to soul are talking about a metaphor, a trope for black consciousness, for a blackness. This is what blackness means, because you're a soul sister, so you know and I know we're talking about what it means to represent black culture as we define it and as we celebrate it at this moment.
Music has always been a part of our culture in the Black Panther Party. For instance, we had our own singing group, The Lumpin'.
The Black Panther Party very proudly presents
And we laugh about it today because we have groups like the Grateful Dead used to play intro for them. You know, they used to come on before.
No.
Yeah, the Lumpin'. The Lumpin', you know, Black Panther Party was like that in the Bay Area. Santana, when he was young, he did shows for us and stuff like that. You got Marvin Gaye to do some stuff, the Pointer Sisters. So music and musicians have always been a part or did shows for us to raise money or participated in rallies for us.
Panther Party music is what we're talking about tonight. Ricky Vincent here with James Mott of The Lumpin', a former and I guess always Panther member. And it's just great having you here, man. It's great having you here.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate hearing the music. I mean, it's very humbling. It's to be honored by the music of today, and also finding out that our music is still being studied in Europe, in South America, countries all around the world.
Did Huey, what did he think of the Lumpin'? Did he attend any of your shows?
He thought that we were very viable in what we were doing at the time, and he thought that it was a good thing that the cultural aspect, which is also not only art, not only a way of dressing and thinking, but also a way of communicating. And the communications of the music and the lyrics and getting the message of the party across was very, very viable as far as Huey was concerned. So we really enjoyed the fact of the support that he had and that he gave the Lumpin'.
Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. We want black power. We want black power.
Stokely Carmichael was one of the most important black power leaders of that time. He was the first one to publicly articulate the term black power.
We don't have to be ashamed of it. We have stayed here and we begged the president. We begged the federal government. That's all we've been doing, begging, begging. It's time we stand up and take over. Take over. We have to do what every group in this country did. We got to take over the communities where we outnumber people so we can have decent jobs. So we can have decent houses. So we can have decent roads. So we can have decent schools.
So we can some of the direct messages coming from the Panthers about black power, black consciousness, were then mirrored in the songs, in the texts, in James Brown, for example, shouting out black and proud. There were direct references in the music to some of the key tropes of the movement?
You could find them. A lot would be embedded in the songs. If you listen to Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, and that song medleys into What's Happening, Brother, and there's a bunch of soul brothers just, you know, slapping hands and talking slang and just the way young men would act at that time. And you could sort of hear the cadence. You could hear the sounds of, you know, yeah, what's going on, man? This is what we're doing. Boo, boo, boo. And you could feel the energy. The people were on the move. And Marvin Gaye actually himself wrote a song about black political empowerment. It was a single that came out right after What's Going On, and it's called You're the Man. Said explicitly, if you're the man with the master plan, I got to vote for you. And at that time, the man with the master plan was Huey P. Newton, and most people in the country knew that. So you had these references. James Brown not only wrote Say It Loud on Black and I'm Proud, he collaborated with some of his other people in his camp. Hank Ballard did a song called Blackenized.
You fellas better quit jiving. You better get yourself together and get blackenized, because that's the real thing that's happening now.
So-called brothers telling lies. You colored people are just signifying. You better go to a natural school. Negroes get hot, black people get in the pool. I don't know whether you realize, before you get your respect, you got to be black or not.
So you had these songs that were sort of bubbling up. These are the late night mixes. If hip-hop mixers know that you start your mix with your pop tunes, and then when you get deep in it, then you play your heavy songs. These heavy songs were always around. They weren't at the top of the charts, but that was the fuel. That was the spice. That was that jalapeno pepper you put in your chili to kick it, to get it over the edge. And so you could find these records. The DJs knew about them. Grown folks knew about them. But it wasn't on American Bandstand. It wasn't on the pop notions. But everybody knew it. And so you could find songs that really spoke to the movement. But then you could play the instrumental, and that would speak to the movement as well. Hit it!
Now, I don't know whether you realize, but before you can get recognized, you got to be blackenized. Now, I'm gonna tell you one more time. Better try to find yourself, brother. Now, let me tell you something. Took me a long time to cut my hair.
Let's talk about some of the musicians who were Panthers themselves. And, of course, the Lumpin' is quite a famous vocal group with, well, it had an instrumental band as well. Can you tell me a bit about how they worked and how they mixed their political activities with the music?
Well, what you said was actually quite a lot right there, to say Panthers that were musicians and practicing musicians. If you are going to say someone is a Panther, that means you joined the Black Panther Party for self-defense. That means you've expressed a commitment to give your life to radical social change in the black community. And that also means a lot of what you were doing before you joined, you're going to have to abandon, because you're going to live and breathe Panther Party practices and policies for the rest of your life. That's a commitment that you were making. You're going to study revolution, study Marxist thought, study Frantz Fanon and Malcolm X and black consciousness. We were talking about people that have made a significant commitment to really take their lives to a whole other level.
The Black Panther Party is very proud of you, man. The Lumpin'!
It started with James Mott, Clark Bailey, Michael Torrance, and Bill Calhoun. They were all former students. And on Wednesday nights is the night the Black Panther Party newspaper comes out. So Black Panther members from all over the Bay Area come to work on this newspaper in San Francisco. So there's maybe about 150, 200 Panthers working on this newspaper, trying to get it out, mail it out, pack up trucks so we can send it to the airport. Maybe from 6 o'clock to maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. It's a long process. But black people always have sung and harmonized in order to take their mind off the work or keep rhythm.
They would hum a song. They would just sort of make up lyrics to songs on the radio. Just what was called work songs back in the day. When people had manual labor that was tedious, they would make up a rhyme just to get through the day. So, you know, Lord have mercy, I can, you know, make this one more day, and things like that. So people would, almost in a tradition in the black experience, they would sing their way through the tedious labor.
So Emory Douglas, our minister of culture, actually heard them singing a song. So he encouraged them to keep practicing. And so he took that lead to the Central Committee and suggested that, hey, we have a potential group here. They sound pretty good. We should invest some time and energy into, you know, developing them.
And that's what happened. And they wrote some music. They performed the song at a rally in San Francisco in the spring of 1970, and it just took off. And the four young men, William Calhoun, Michael Torrance, Clark Bailey, and James Mott, became known as the Lumpin', as the rhythm and blues band of the Black Panther Party.
We never paid the band. The band was all volunteer band, right? And people from the band, like Minor Williams, the drummer, he was inducted into the California Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And there was other members of the group who went on to play with Chaka Khan and a singing group called the Whispers. So out of that nucleus, people pursued their ideals and their dreams of becoming a star or a singer in the recording business.
You guys were giving tribute to the music that preceded you and some of your live performances.
You did a rendition of Curtis Mayfield's People Get Ready, and I wanted to play that.
Oh, God, you know, I mean, you remember what a genius Curtis Mayfield was. And, of course, one of my favorite songs, you know, People Get Ready. He was talking about the train to freedom, and we're talking about moving on up, moving to make permanent change. And so I was very much influenced, and I'm proud of the fact that we were able to actually take the music of his song and add some other lyrics to it that would make sense to the people during that generation.
We make a special dedication tonight. As you know, we're cutting live here at Mary Tyler's. We'd like to dedicate our entire album to the Minister of Defense, Supreme Commander of the Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton.
They took popular songs and changed the lyrics. Their message was a revolutionary message.
We said, people get ready.
They used common songs at that time, maybe of James Brown, some of his beats or his lyrics, and also The Temptations and other popular R&B groups. But what they did was revolutionize or put certain revolutionary lyrics into the song. So basically when the music started, you would recognize the song, but the lyrics would be totally different.
And so sick of trying. I'm tired of living and play of dying.
Old Pig Nixon, right. Now, that was a song that the Temptations made. Temptations made a song called Old Man River. So they added Old Pig Nixon, you know, and was a song about Richard Nixon, the then President of the United States.
We're tired of the meat.
And there was other songs like Bobby Must Set Free. That was a 45 they recorded, they put out, and sold pretty good.
Free Bobby Now came out of the success of the Lumpens' impromptu live performance at the park in the Fillmore District. And it was so engaging that the Minister of Culture, Emory Douglas, told the group, you need to make a recording of this song. And it was a song about Bobby Seale, who was in jail in 1970. Here you had Bobby Seale, who was one of the most engaging Panther leaders, who was in a very precarious position with law enforcement, just lining up opportunities to try to eliminate him and execute him. So to make a song that supported the Black Panther Party line in the spring of 1970, it wasn't hard to find issues. And it was a way to get people to chant and stomp and scream and shout and really express their solidarity. That it's, you know, we gotta get him out.
I want no man at any time alone.
Right.
We want security, not
right.
Horsing around. As we get out of those trucks, I want fixed bayonets as we dismount.
Sirens, fire engines, ambulances, police cars, burglar alarms. Absolutely incredible scene. The
Do you think these riots are accomplishing anything?
They are. They're bringing people closer together.
But now, there's a lot of hip-hop groups that are interested in what the Panthers were doing with music.
How now, Brown? Down, down with the Mau Mau clown. Downtown, trying to put us in a dog pen like they trapped Brown. But the situation...
Well, you know, calluses come.
Cause we're spitting dialectical analysis. So how is this? We never had no funk. Until you found out that our trunks are revolutionary, huh?
Chuck!
Bump you over like dominoes, rat.
So free Geronimo, you jack a prat.
But now, within the last couple years... Many hip-hop groups has found out about the lumpen and started using a lot of some of their phrases. I don't know if you've heard of this guy. His name is Boots Riley. He has a hip-hop group called Boots and the Coup. He's pretty popular in America and around the world. And he was the first one to kind of dig their style and mold it to his style.
Oakland, California, 9-4-6-1 up.
Small army and policemen, most of them carrying shotguns. National guardsmen riding jeeps with 30,000.
Rioting and looting in a small section of the Negro community in the south side of town.
Well, Chuck D talked about James Brown and people like that couldn't have made songs if it wasn't for the Black Panther Party, because we laid out the landscape. You know, we made it possible for they can sing songs like that.
So here's a song to the star about the shape of a snake and a smile that went along with that.
Can't trust it. Can't trust it.
And so Chuck D was very aware of that. He's a very educated guy. I think he teaches at a university in New York, you know. So Chuck D gets the party a lot of credit. The credit that's due, you know.
Get dressed. All right. Watch the step, boy. Get dressed. Come on. Boy. Get dressed. Hey. We got the step, boy. Get dressed.
Conscious hip-hop artists revere Gil Scott-Heron and The Last Poets and Los Angeles-based Watts Prophets as pioneers in the form, and that has to do with revolutionary rhythm and rhyme. I call them the War Poets, Gil Scott-Heron and The Last Poets and the Watts Prophets, because they performed in an uncompromising way the raw revolutionary spirit in the community, and they did it with rhythm and rhyme.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out.
Gil Scott-Heron is one of the great political artists of that generation. Perhaps the greatest, although he didn't sell the most records. Everybody knew Gil Scott-Heron was there. The revolution will not be televised. Everybody understood what was happening when he wrote that song.
The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised. Will not be televised. Not be
and
televised.
His rendition. It was actually recorded twice. The second version is more of an R&B backdrop, specifically so it could be aired on the radio and people could get it. They could feel it.
The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised.
He really was a visionary in terms of thinking of what the possibilities are for Black people in particular, and his way of articulating what the obstacles are, the long road, the home is where the hatred is, just what people are up against, Whitey's on the moon, the way he would articulate the contrast between white privilege and Black oppression and let you feel it in the moment.
And I see the robins perched in barren treetops, they're watching the last ditch races go marching across the floor, and like
the peace signs that vanished in our dreams and never had a chance to grow. Well, they never had a chance to grow. If somebody won't know, tell them it's winter. Does it feel like a winter in America? It's a time when all of the healers, people who could help us, done been killed. They've been betrayed. Yes, people know it's something wrong. Feel just like winter. It's winter in America. The truth is there ain't nobody fighting because, well, nobody knows what to say.
Gil Scott-Heron was really had almost no peers, and he really created a sound of music that was a genre all its own. It was soul, but it was jazz, but it was really politically conscious, and it had a certain funk edge to it. The Last Poets are an interesting group because they were so full of fire, they didn't last long as a unit. They quickly splintered into two entities that call themselves The Last Poets. And that's why you can buy a record by The Last Poets, released in 1969, and buy another record by the original Last Poets, also released in 1969.
Silent niggas, scream for help. I turn around and hear the sound of jukeboxes playing in bars. Pimps parked outside in big pretty Cadillac cars. Cleaning in a broke dick dog. Sitting in a big fine hog. Dressed very fine in a mohair silk fine. But Jim Dale died next, cause the white man's got a God complex. Hey, brother, what's your sport, my man?
And both would be members of this group that met in a Harlem art space called the East Wind, and they would perform fiery revolutionary rhymes, mostly over an accompaniment of a conga player, and speak about not just revolutionary change, but what it means to be black. What's the difference between a Negro, a black, and an other N-word? You know, what's going on? Who are we? And a lot of their songs had to do with a black awakening and putting the N-word to death.
Heard some white folks talking. Had a riot yesterday. 10 niggas died. Died, nigga. Say what? 10 niggas died. Yeah, died, nigga. Went down to Whitehall Street. Heard a sergeant reporting lots of niggas dying in Vietnam. Died, nigga. Died, nigga. Nigga died. Had to get away from niggas. Dying all the time.
So the whole point was, and they would say this, you know, we were trying to awaken the black man and put the nigger to bed, put him away, because he was the problem. He was not revolutionary. And so they would have variations on this theme. One of the most important records was Niggers Are Scared of Revolution. Again, that was the theme of we need black people to awaken and not fall into these negative traps that life of the street offers to people. So as much as their language is coarse and violent and sometimes vicious and homophobic and just really on the edge at that moment, there is in it an undercurrent of empowerment involved. They were just raw. They were telling it like it is. And they had no confusion about this. Their name, The Last Poets, had to do with this notion that after these poems, the guns will be talking.
The global economy becomes a global slave. Who do we dispose of and who do we save? The panther is yawning. The rhythm and blues. Conservative smiles on the 5 o'clock news. Here comes Newt. Here comes the ground. Here comes the fury. Here comes the sound.
No more healthcare. No more dreams. Heroes, no more themes, no more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes.
They were very serious about what they were doing, but they also found themselves in an environment where people said, oh, you're a revolutionary, huh? All you do is talk. What are you really doing for the revolution? And they were put to task to become activists just so they could back up what they were saying. That's who the last poets were, particularly from 1969 to 1971.
Darkness of night, screaming silently, you're a man. Have you ever hoped that a time would come when your voice could be heard in a noonday sun? Have you waited so long?
We haven't talked about Elaine Brown, who was a bit different in her style, and she was a Panther, yes?
Elaine Brown joined the Black Panther Party while she was in school in Los Angeles, and she had a musical background. Already. She was already trained in classical music, trained in performance, singing, and songwriting. She came to Los Angeles trying to get discovered as an entertainer. She was working at the Pink Pussycat Club for a while, just trying to get a foothold in the entertainment scene, all the while going to school. And while she went to school, she was exposed to a lot of the Black revolutionary thought. And of course, it was in the air. Everybody was being exposed to it.
We talked about freedom and things.
And she emerged quickly as one of the student leaders and found herself connected to Los Angeles members of the Black Panther Party. And David Hilliard, who was chief of staff of the Black Panther Party at that point, he heard the emotional pull of her music and sort of announced that she needs to record an album of Black Panther music. And so Elaine Brown, with the support of the Black Panther Party, she worked with a very accomplished jazz arranger by the name of Horace Tapscott. And he took her songs and arranged them in this really emotionally intense way, making what you would call these revolutionary ballads.
Yes, I remember the yesterdays, the poverty that you and me survived. For we tried living on streets that weren't giving, and laughed and cried in youth we died and didn't know. Yes, my friends, our history, the memory shall carry me until we're free. The times we saw we didn't deserve, hostility we couldn't see, it was absurd.
And they were very strident, they were very powerful. They didn't have the finger snap and swing that rhythm and blues had, but the music was unforgettable.
Yes, my friends, the memory shall carry me until we're free. Desperate kisses in alleyways, the future days they laid to waste our little lives. The concrete park, a stab in the dark to rest our soul, and we were old before we grew. Oh yes, my friends.
It's called Seize the Time, and that was recorded in 1969. And that record was sold at Black Panther events and advertised in the Black Panther paper. And it was known that that was the music of the Black Panther Party. And she was seen as the songwriter for the Black Panther Party because she did write these songs. It really spoke to the ideology of the party and to the heroism of these young blacks and young black men. She was really adept at capturing, you know, black masculinity and what the Panther was seeking to do to defend the community as warriors. Her imagery was very, very strident. It was really strong music.
You worry about liberty because you've been denied. Well, I think that you're mistaken, or then you must have lied. Because you do not act like those. You've never even fought for the liberty that you claim to lack. Or have you never fought to seize the time? The time is now. Oh, seize the time. You know
got to build so much strength in building our community that if they come to get one person, they're going to have to mess with us all. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. We've got to build so much strength inside our community so that when LBJ says, come here, boy, to my war, we say, hell no, we ain't going.
Stokely Carmichael was very charismatic, and so he could do speeches, he could work with students, he could work with a classroom, he could rally thousands of people. Stokely was one of the most engaging people in the room. Stokely married the South African singer Miriam Makeba, and their marriage in the late 1960s was a stuff of legend because she was world famous as an entertainer and an exile from her native South Africa. And so they both kind of represented revolutionary African royalty.
When he tried to take the people away from oppression, from day to day, Malcolm lived for liberation. Until that man with the gun took away his devotion. I said, left his wife and kids without protection.
Miriam Makeba did an amazing sort of tribute song to Malcolm X that connects really the worldview of Malcolm, because Malcolm did a lot to awaken black people to Africa and how both the struggles in Africa and the struggles in the United States for black people are one and the same.
One of my reasons for going out on the limb as I have is to try and make white people be shocked awake to some of their senses, because if they don't awake, they're going to find out that this little Negro that they thought was passive has become a roaring, uncontrollable lion right at their doorstep, not at their doorstep, inside their house, in their bed, in their kitchen, in their attic, in their basement. And if you know that in time, you can do something about it.
A last question around the way that the black artists at this time really influenced the cultural norms of a whole generation of pop culture. The way the music actually, at that time, laid the groundwork for a new generation of pop music.
Yes, my skin is black, but that's no reason to hold me back.
There's a way that the music of the 70s was a resonance of the black power movement, because it said, black people, you can do this, you can do that, and you can do it on your own terms, and you can change the world.
This is a message to y'all. Together we stand, divided people.
Al Sharpton, who was James Brown's best friend for a long time, when he died, he said, James Brown is the most important man in America because he didn't just try to be a black man crossing over into white America. James Brown made white America cross over to black. He made white America understand who they are on their own terms.
Say it loud. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop me now. Say it loud.
I'm black and I'm proud.
I'm black and I'm proud. You know, that particular song came out in 1968. But he couldn't have made that song if it wasn't for groups like the Black Panther Party laying the foundation for those words to be said. It couldn't have been those songs, Give All Power to the People by the Shy Lights, if it wasn't for the Black Panther Party. You know, so the Black Panther Party was a revolutionary entity. As we know, there's not one thing that's revolutionary in itself. It's just the content, the revolutionary content you inject into something.
Struggle all
shame. Love for the people fanned the flame, and the spirit of the Panther will never die. Oh, they lay their lives on the line. Yes, they did. When they did to see the time.
The music of the Black Power Movement, produced at KPFK by Ricky Vincent. That came from a website, itsabouttimebpp.com, where you can find a trove of Black Panther audio archives and history. The impact of the Black Panthers and Black Power Movement on the civil rights struggle and the culture of the 60s, both black and white, cannot be overstated. And the lessons of the Black Power struggle are difficult lessons, and in many cases, paradoxical, but still relevant to the struggle today. In the assassination of Fred Hampton by the Chicago police in 1969, which was covered in the PBS documentary, we find the template, an MO for police malfeasance, lying, and cover-up, a template that, until today, has still been successful. But is the lesson one of futility and struggle against a ruthless power structure of a police state, a sentiment captured in Gil Scott Heron's Winter in America? Or, in it do we find a sobering touchstone to gain the clarity and gravitas needed for victory and liberation? My name is Elliot Tarry, and this has been another edition of the Bread and Roses Show.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Marching so many